And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call, 910-251-6088. We'll have more from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, tariffs. It has been a major word and a major discussion point really over the last year or so, but of course really coming into swing earlier this year in January, just a couple of days after the Trump administration and President Donald Trump was sworn in as the 47th president of the United States. He campaigned and talked a lot about it. And well, regardless of whether you think the tariffs are a good idea or a bad idea, which there's plenty of debate on that still, the jury is still out on that, President Donald Trump said he was going to put in wide sweeping tariffs. Well, and that's exactly what he's done. And it's been a major political contention point, obviously kind of ignoring what is going on the left side of the political aisle. Anything that Donald Trump does to folks on the left is, of course, always the worst, most terrible thing in the world. But on the GOP, on the more conservative side of the aisle, there has been, and I think rightfully so, significant debate over this discussion on tariffs. The Trump administration and President Trump himself is under the impression and under the mindset, at least from what I've heard him discuss publicly, the things that he has said, his posts on social media, that the tariffs are a necessary thing to drive manufacturing back to the United States. Now, there's open debate, and I think rightfully so, is again, on the notion, the idea, does that actually drive manufacturing to the United States? One thing we can say for certain, and I can say for certain this morning, is that tariffs absolutely cost American consumers money. This notion, this concept that companies or manufacturers, everybody is just eating the cost on tariffs, and it is making prices lower for U.S. voters and U.S. folks that are buying goods and services. It's just not true, and nobody believes that. I mean, I'm looking back. This is a Carolina Journal poll back from May, and the question was, how likely do you think it is that higher tariffs on imported goods will result in you paying more for products you buy? 75.3% of North Carolinians thought that that would have a likely impact on the increased prices. 56.2 said very, 19.1 said somewhat, less than 20% said unlikely. So regardless of, and this is a poll of Republicans, Democrats, and unaffiliateds across the state of North Carolina, over 75%, 3 in 4 people say, yes, absolutely, tariffs are going to have an increased cost in the things that we're buying, the products that we're purchasing, maybe the goods that we're consuming, so on and so forth. So this is a major political gamble that is being played out by this administration. So let's go back to late last week, President Donald Trump's efforts to impose tariffs on countries all across the map on imported goods from foreign governments has hit a massive roadblock. In a 7-4 ruling from the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, found that the president has exceeded his authority when he cited a 1977 Emergency Powers Act to implement many of his tariffs. If upheld, tens of billions of dollars in tariff revenue would have to be returned in the wide sweeping 10, 15, 30% tariffs that you've seen levied on countries all over the globe. Those would go away. Now, it's not happening immediately. The ruling will not take effect until a little over a month from now on October the 14th. And that was set up to allow the administration and give them time to appeal this decision that came out late last week to the United States Supreme Court. And the order from the court reads as follows. The statute bestows significant authority on the president to undertake a number of actions in response to a declared national emergency, but none of these actions explicitly include the power to impose tariffs, duties, or the power to tax, reads the order from the court. Now, many economists, and again, even those on the right side of the political aisle, have argued that these increased tariffs on goods from literally every country across the globe is essentially a tax on the American consumer. It is a tax on folks that are going to the stores, going to the store and buying goods. It is a tax. It is causing major economic strain. And again, these are from folks that are on the right side of the political. We'll catch up here in just a few minutes with economist Dr. Vanskin, who worked in the first Trump administration, has been a longtime supporter of President Donald Trump, and folks like himself and many others are arguing on this tariff policy. And it's interesting because this administration has put so much emphasis, so much effort into tariffs that this court order, and unless the president is able to get a favorable ruling from the United States Supreme Court, he has expended an incredible amount of political capital on something that a little over a month from now could be completely shot down. The ruling applies to those tariffs made under the authority of the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or the IEEPA, but not those passed by the president through other laws. Trump has said that billions of dollars of revenue from tariffs would help balance the budget and erode the massive government debt. He has also said that the use of tariffs is a threat to force companies to bring back manufacturing to the United States. Going back to the president's comments in April on Liberation Day, when many of these wide sweeping tariffs were announced, the president said this, quote, "The tariffs give us great power to negotiate. Always have, and I've used them very well in my first administration, as you saw. But now we're taking it to a whole new level because it's a worldwide situation and it's very exciting to see." Critics say that the Constitution specifically granted the power of tariffs to Congress and that tariffs usually lead to trade wars, lost jobs, and inflation. So this is a very brutal ruling for the Trump administration. Again, this order coming out from the U.S. Court of Appeals at the Federal Circuit, or in D.C., late last week. I think it was on the 29th, so that would have been on Friday, in a 7-4 ruling from that court, dealing a major blow to the Trump administration and their ongoing impacts and their ongoing efforts to impose broad tariffs across the board. And as we've been talking about this morning, now the lawfare around tariffs, a major discussion across the United States. Our next guest had this to say about the matter. When the courts have to remind the president that he cannot unilaterally tax Americans, it says a lot about how far we've drifted from our constitutional design. I'd like to welcome economist Dr. Vanskin back to our airwaves this morning on the Nick Craig Show. Vance, holding no words back, mincing none on social media. Go ahead and walk us through what you've learned over the last couple of days watching this unfold.
Yeah, Nick, it's incredible that we're in this situation. It's always a good pleasure to be with you. But on August 29th, we had a federal appeals court rule that President Trump's sweeping, quote unquote, Liberation Day tariffs and related measures imposed by the International Emergency Powers Act, the IEEPA, they're unconstitutional. It does mean, though, Nick, that you have the Section 232, which is the steel and aluminum tariffs. You have the Section 301, which are the China-related tariffs. Those stay intact. It's the more broad base, the Liberation Day, where it's a 10% tariffs across the board for all the different countries. And then, Trump administrations use that kind of negotiating, that leverage, that negotiating tactic to then impose other types of tariffs that are more reciprocal. Those are the ones that this lower held court, appeals court, has found that they are unconstitutional. Of course, this will go up to the Supreme Court probably pretty quickly, given that these are already in place. But they did punt this off till October. So it means that they can keep these tariffs in place on other things that are out there, these other countries, the 10% and so forth, the quote-unquote Liberation Day tariffs, until October, so another month or so. But look, I think at the end of the day, though, Nick, what I've been so concerned about is that this is raising taxes on Americans. And so while I still want to go after China, I still want more manufacturing jobs here in America, what I've tried to make the case for is that this is not the way to do it. And at the end of the day, Congress has the power of the purse. They're the ones that should be putting in new taxes, which are what tariffs are, or any sort of spending, not the presidency. And so I think that's really where we're starting to see this balance of power, if you will, between the legislative executive branch and now the judicial branch coming in to talk about tariffs.
Vance, we've covered this issue a couple of times since the beginning of the year. Obviously, Trump getting into office back on January the 20th. He talked about tariffs a lot during the campaign. And you know, to his credit, he held true on that promise, and he did start initiating those pretty quickly after getting into office. Vance, you worked in the first Trump administration. You worked in OMB. I would not describe you as an anti-Trump guy. I'm sure some folks maybe on the right would try and throw that tag on you. Can you give us a broad overview of why you continue to be against some of these policies that the president seems, I'll argue, pretty hell-bent in keeping in place here across the U.S.?
Yeah, you know, Nick, yeah, I was there from June 2019 to May of 2020. So I was there for about a year, saw COVID and also a lot of the other tariffs. The USMCA was finalized while I was there as well as the new NAFTA. And so I get the idea of trying to put us in a better position for these trade deals. And look, I'm not here to say that those trade deals that have been done in the past are any good. What I will try to put, you know, keep pushing back on is this notion that tariffs will somehow bring back manufacturing jobs. If you look at what this was the big assumption, right, Nick, is that manufacturing has been hollowed out by China. And a lot of it's to do with our trade deals, even NAFTA at the end of the day. But if you look at whenever employment in manufacturing started to decline, it wasn't in 1994 when NAFTA was passed or in 2001 when China joined the World Trade Organization. It started during the 1950s and 60s. That's really when we started seeing manufacturing go down in employment because of automation. More productivity. Many people didn't want to work in those factory hours and jobs that were very risky. They wanted to move somewhere else. And so while we've seen a decline in employment, having more tariffs and a higher cost on Americans from buying those imported goods is not going to change up those factors within the manufacturing sector. And I should note that even when you look at economic output from a number of different measures for manufacturing, we're still hitting record highs. So we're producing more than we ever have before in manufacturing. It's just that the employment isn't there. And it's hard to bring back jobs just to say, look, we're going to add in a tariff for something else. Instead, my push, whether I was in the Trump administration then debating with Peter Navarro or others in the Trump administration, or even today, my push is to say we should be lowering the cost of doing business for Americans, that for businesses that are here. That's the best way to provide more opportunity for job creation and more economic growth and capital investment in America is lowering the corporate tax rate, lowering individual tax rates, reducing government spending, reducing regulations. And some of those things the Trump administration in the second term are doing, but I think there's a lot more that they should be doing on the track of lowering government spending and reducing tax burdens as much as possible instead of raising taxes on Americans from imported goods.
Well, I'm glad you bring up a couple of those other factors. Your corporate income tax, that is continually going down here in North Carolina. It's eventually set to, as it stands right now, be zero over the next couple of years. There are some income triggers, so we'll continue to track that. But Vance, I'm glad you bring up some of these factors. You talk about regulation. I mean, let's talk about unions. You want to talk about groups that force manufacturing out of the United States, unions going around busting up companies. There are a lot of other factors that I would argue are still major problems in the United States that have caused manufacturing to go overseas, on top of, again, some of the other limitations as it relates to costs. This is a multifaceted equation. I can't imagine that tariffs are the silver bullet that solves all said problems with manufacturing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And the other thing that I've kind of tracked and done some research on is, to your point, about states. So when you look out, so the other thing we hear about is hollowing out of the manufacturing, it kind of covered that. Also the hollowing out of the Rust Belt. Well, the hollowing out of the Rust Belt were in states that were highly unionized states that had high amounts of government spending and regulation. And so as a business, a lot of these manufacturing companies like GM, you know, Chevrolet and others that are out there, they started looking around and say, should I stay in Ohio? Should I stay in Michigan where I'm being run out with these high costs of unions and high taxes? Well, where else can I go to make more profitability? Because at the end of the day, that's what every business is in business to do, is to make profits. And so where do they move? They move to the Sun Belt. they tended to move to places like North Carolina, South Carolina, Texas, where I live, Florida, Tennessee. And then once those costs were also going up from higher federal minimum wages and other things, raising the cost, then they decided to move to other countries. It's not like a business, an employer. I think this is the mindset, Nick, is that some people just want their bottom line, which is partially true, but that they want to go to other countries and get those employees. That's not the case. You got to deal with a whole set of regulations, other taxes. It's very costly to produce and have a business in another country. What it tells me is that it's too high a cost of doing business in America, even in places like Texas or North Carolina. But when we start putting in place these sound policies, like you just mentioned, North Carolina, going to zero on the corporate income taxes, lowering income taxes, personal income taxes, those are the types of ways that I believe will really bring about more jobs here in America, whether they be manufacturing or otherwise. The other point I've made about this, Nick, is why do we have such an infatuation with manufacturing jobs? I mean, it's important, I think, as having jobs for people, but many people, many Americans, don't want to work in manufacturing. It's like they're trying to push us into this industrial policy that they only know the right way forward, when in fact, Americans are telling us that, no, they don't necessarily want to work in those certain areas. So why not allow for international trade? Why not allow for other countries to produce things as well? And at the end of the day, people benefit when they trade. They mutually benefit or they would not trade. And so I hope we see more free trade, not less free trade in the process.
Let's go back to what's going on at the Trump administration now. We had that court order late last week, as you noted, that some of this is likely to start rolling out in the month of October when some additional court rulings could come out. Vance, one of the things that I've appreciated about this second Trump administration, and we saw it in the first as well, when they're called out, when things may not necessarily be working out the way that they should, they do have the ability to pivot. There are examples of that existing. My question for you is, there's been so many eggs put in the basket of these tariff policies on countries that most people could not even find on a map or even pronounce across the entire globe. Are they too invested in tariffs to pivot away? Are they just going to let this play out? How do you see this shaking out over the next 60 days and potentially even 6 months?
Well, I think it really depends on what the Supreme Court says. I mean, if the Supreme Court comes in and says that this is unconstitutional, these taxes that they're putting on with tariffs across the board, I think that will force the Trump administration to rethink their efforts along the lines of those tariffs. Now, would I say that they'll go back away from them entirely? I don't think so, given how vested, to your point, that Trump is and others are in the administration of going down the route of tariffs. I mean, they've made... they're saying that tariffs are going to bring back this golden age. I mean, they're really dug into what's happening with tariffs. So my guess is that they'll try to use other types of emergency declarations like Section 232 or Section 301, other types of declarations that they do have more authority to then go about maybe one-off tariffs on different countries versus this broad-based sort of quote-unquote Liberation Day cut kind again. And by the way, too, Nick, I think what's important to realize is that we've heard of other trade agreements like the UK and the United States, the EU in the United States, South Korea in the United States. We've heard of these, but these are frameworks. They're not actual trade deals that have been signed. All of them are frameworks of what they could look like. And so nothing actually has been done yet, even with the more leverage that some would say that Trump administration has from these tariffs. And so instead, what we've seen are a lot higher taxes on Americans, in some cases being 25%, 50% from imported goods. And oh, by the way, the trade deficit is also widening. And so at the same time they're trying to reduce the trade deficit, we're seeing an increase because of the way the system works between exports and imports, the value of the dollar. There's so many different factors, and you correctly mentioned this earlier, that we're not even getting into, like the debt also contributes to higher interest rates. And if interest rates are higher, the Fed prints more money, and then we see more inflation. Well, then you buy it from somewhere else. There's so many different factors. And what I hope we can get down to is that the Trump administration could see that there is an error in their ways with these tariffs. I don't know if they'll step back, but hopefully within the next 60 days, we'll have more clarity, because businesses are also telling me across the country, the employers, that there's so much uncertainty right now. They don't know what their cost structure is going to be, what their supply chains are going to be. And that makes it very difficult for investment, which we've seen investment slow down the last couple of quarters.
You know, I caught a couple of interesting polls over the last few months. Many, of course, many of the questions being asked about the economy, more specifically tariffs. As you go back just a month or two, it was a major story on cable news pretty much every day and on the nightly newscasts. Consistent discussion about that. And Vance, I found it interesting that most people said that, yes, they understood that there would be higher prices in the short term, but they thought that there would be some long-term gains for these increased tariffs. You know, as the days and weeks go on from this, and as we watch this continue to play out, I would begin to argue that that runway of people thinking, okay, there's some long-term benefits, is starting to shorten. The administration's got to probably make that point coming up here over the next couple of months, or this is going to be a major political issue for Republicans in the midterms.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Exactly right. And yeah, I mean, they started this April 1st, kind of April Fool's Day, I guess. And then they suspended them for another month. And some of those have been put in place, the 10%. So you've got to think we've been in this for 4 or 5 months now. And I think people are starting to see, to your point, Americans are starting to ask, okay, where are the benefits? We're not seeing manufacturing jobs come back. In fact, they've been declining over the last few months. So where are the jobs at? We're seeing the unemployment rate come up some. You know, not the inflation has also increased. Now, I would argue that's not from the tariffs. Inflation is the measure of general level of prices, which tariffs influence the specific prices, relative prices. So aluminum and steel will go up, or other things that we import, not necessarily all of the supplies being reduced, therefore increasing demand for all goods and services, therefore increasing inflation. That only comes whenever the Fed prints too much money. And we haven't seen that part just yet from that side of things. But inflation is up 3.1% year over year. That's much higher than the Fed would like for it to be at 2%. So there is inflationary pressures. At the same time, what I would argue is that looking at this is that the tariffs distort economic activity. Because you don't know what your supply chains are going to be, what the production process, what the costs are going to be of your raw materials, and those have been going up. And so while not all the cost is passed on to the consumer right away, it is over time. And so that's why when you talk to a lot of Americans, I think that they still feel this basket of goods and services, their prices, their inflation keeps going up and the value of their dollar keeps going down. And when you look at the polls, to your point, of saying, okay, how do you feel about the economy? Trump's actually losing points on that right now. And at some point, Trump is going to flip because he likes to look at these polls and say, what's going on? And especially before even the primaries. Primaries are going to be here soon, Nick. You know, in March, many places across the country. And if Republicans have to go out to back and support and defend the tariffs, I'm worried there's a lot of them that are going to lose that would otherwise be good fiscal conservatives and good Republicans.
Yeah, obviously, there's a lot of various political things at play with all of this. Vance, regardless of what poll you look at, the economy is almost always one of the top issues that American voters are struggling with or something on their mind when they're casting votes, whether that be municipal elections later this year or as we head into the midterm elections next year. You keep folks up to date on that on a very regular basis. You've got a newsletter, a Substack, a podcast. How can folks keep up to date with the stuff that you're publishing and up to date with the latest stuff that you're tracking with the economy?
Yeah, Nick, always it's a pleasure to always be on the show with you. You're doing great work there. And anyone can find me at vanceguillen.com. That's easy. You can find my podcast and everything that's there. I have a Substack newsletter, vanceguillen.substack.com. And my podcast is the Let People Prosper Show. I have two episodes every week, one with an interview with an expert, and the other one is just me kind of ripping on what's going on in the economy and everything. But I hope everybody go check that out on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and other places where you get your podcast. But Nick, it's always a pleasure to join you. Hopefully we'll have more, you know, better things to talk about here soon that rather than tariffs, because the economy needs it. Americans need it.
Vance, thank you so much for the time. Greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Nick.
Always great to catch up with Vance. Appreciate his insight for those that have not been following me for any significant period of time. Vance has been a longtime guest on the show going back to the radio days. We've been chatting with him regularly about the economy for at this point, probably well over 4 years. And, you know, there's a lot that is going on with this tariff discussion. There's a lot. And there's been a lot since the early days of the second Trump administration. I have made the point, and I'll continue to make the point, this is a major gamble that the Trump administration is making. And again, I showed you this poll result. I'll pull it up once again so that you can look at it. 75% of voters back in the May Carolina Journal poll indicated that higher tariffs on imported goods will result in you paying more in the products that you buy. 75%. So people understand and have come to the realization that tariffs will have an increase in cost. And now many folks have also said at the same time, we're okay with some of those increasing costs for a period of time while we watch this end result, which is what we have been told is going to be bringing back more manufacturing, more jobs to the United States. And this is one of the questions in the poll, the same poll from May. The question is this: how long of a disruption to the U.S. economy would you be willing to accept in order for the U.S. to realize any economic benefits from higher tariffs? This is a really good question. Now, 40% of people said that they don't believe that there will be any benefit at all. Okay, so we'll take that group. About 9% of people said a few months. 16% of people said a year. 17% of people said 2 to 3 years, and then the numbers go up. 3%, 4 to 5 years, and 5% saying more than 5 years. And the reason that I make this point, that it is a significant gamble for the Trump administration, is they don't have 4 or 5 years. You know, from the very early days of this Trump administration, regardless of tariffs, let's just set the tariff discussion aside for a second. On anything that Trump has done and continues to do, and a lot of it has been, of course, incredibly good work over the last 6 months or so, there has always been a very short runway to November of 2026. That is when the midterm elections roll around. That is when Republicans at the federal level are going to have a very, very tough election cycle, not because of Trump, not because of anything else, just based on the simple reality, the simple fact that in midterm elections, the party in charge, which in this case, it is exclusively the GOP, you've got a Republican president and Republicans holding a majority in both the House and the Senate, the party in charge always tends to struggle in midterm elections. This is not a Trump effect. This is not something new in more modern politics. This is the case going back like literally over 100 years. This is not anything that is earth-shattering or anything that is new. And so I have made the point since the very early days of this second Trump administration that things that Trump wants to do, there has to be a quick payoff. Because midterm elections are going to roll around. And you can guarantee that as soon as Republicans lose control, and the only place they'll lose control in the midterms will likely be the House, the path to Democrats getting control of the Senate are incredibly low. They've got to defend a bunch of seats and they've got to flip 4 to 5 Senate seats to get a majority. The likelihood of that, just based on the math, based on the seats that are available, including, of course, the one here in North Carolina with Senator Tom Tillis retiring, the battle that is likely to play out between former Democrat Governor Roy Cooper and former head of the RNC, Michael Whatley. The likelihood of Democrats gaining control of the Senate, incredibly low. But the House, well, that's a completely different ballgame. Republicans have a very thin majority right now, and in a midterm election, it is you as the party in charge are never favored in the midterms. And so I've continually made the point that if this administration wants to go forth with major changes, which I'm glad that the Trump administration is, there are a lot of things that do need to be shaken up. There are a lot of things that do need to be changed, that they have to have a quick payoff. They have to have some sort of actual metric that people can look at in a relatively short amount of time to get things done. And that's kind of where we are right now. And as we sit here in the early parts of September, that runway is getting ever shorter. Right? We've got primary elections coming up not too long from now. It'll be early March. And then, of course, as we get through the spring and summer months of 2026 and into the early fall, it is going to be all hands on deck politics all across the country as those midterm elections play out. And so the question that I have for the Trump administration this morning, and the question I'll pose to you, is that is there enough runway left for this to work out if it's going to? Now, the reality is the courts may step in before this can be said and done. The reality is this temporary stay that was put on this no effect order is only good until October the 14th. So you've got a relatively, in this case, short amount of time, about a month or so, to make things happen or risk the United States Supreme Court claiming that under this act from 1977, these Emergency Powers Act that the administration has used, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, you've only got a month to get some of those things done before I would argue, and I don't know this to be the case, but there's a strong likelihood that the United States Supreme Court does not rule in favor of the president. There is a very strong likelihood that the nation's highest court says this is not the use of the IEEPA. This is not the use of that law from the late 1970s. Now, there are, of course, workarounds. The administration can go forth with additional tariffs like we currently have on automobiles and steel and aluminum, other imports into the United States. As we just heard from economist Dr. Vance Ginn, those are not what are being discussed. But it is these sweeping 10, 15, 20% tariffs across the board on every other country. That is what is at debate right now. That is what is being challenged in the legal system, and that is what's going through the courts right now. And so, have tariffs brought in a significant amount of revenue to the United States? Yes. And we'll get into those details, plus get some of your comments and some more of my thoughts as we continue with the program this morning, streaming live, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook. I want to thank our great advertisers that make the show possible each and every weekday morning, including the Law Group right here in Wilmington. And if legal challenges do arise, make sure you put your trust in the Law Group. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, maybe you're looking to buy a house, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong criminal defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved as promptly as possible. Great news, folks. They're located right here in Wilmington, and they're just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or visit their great website, lawgroupnc.com, where you can read about all of their attorneys, view the areas of practice in which they expertise in. And one of the great things on the Law Group website, their blog, where they discuss a variety of legal challenges and matters, all of that available at lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We appreciate the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. More on this very important tariff discussion coming up as the Nick Craig Show rolls on a Wednesday morning, streaming live, YouTube, Rumble, X, Facebook, and available 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us as we continue the very heated discussion, even within circles on the right, over tariffs, over the discussion of whether this is a good or bad policy for the United States. And, you know, when I was talking when we were chatting with Vance Ginn, economist Dr. Vance Ginn, you know, I made the point that the Trump administration, I might argue that the tariff thing has really been their most important policy and most important platform in terms of the amount of time and effort that they have put into it. And that's what makes this such a tough issue for the Trump administration to deal with. They have put so much effort, so much emphasis on this discussion over tariffs that it makes it very hard to pivot away. It makes it very hard to try and course correct this issue if, in fact, the United States Supreme Court does not rule in favor of the president, which, you know, I'm not an attorney. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be one. But reading analysis of the act from the late 1970s, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, that the administration is using for these sweeping tariffs across the globe, there is, I think, a strong likelihood that the United States Supreme Court rules against Trump in that matter and claims that if tariffs need to be put in place, that they need to be done through Congress, which is something that is likely not going to happen. The reality is Congress is not likely to move forward with any of the president's major tariff plans. You know, there's been discussion since the early part of this year that the administration could go to Congress, could go to the House Speaker Mike Johnson, could go to Senate Leader John Thune and try and get tariffs enshrined in law, which would be, many would argue, is the proper process for this to play out. And I would contend to you that the appetite for that is incredibly low, that folks in Congress have very little, if not zero, interest in waging into this war over tariffs. Again, U.S. consumers very clearly understand, and rightfully so, understand that this has an increase in cost. Now, the question is that increase in cost worth some long-term economic gains? Is that worth long-term winning and long-term effects for the United States? And as we sit here this morning, I'm not sure what those long-term goals are. If it's to bring back manufacturing to the United States, I'm not necessarily sure that that is going to be the, as I mentioned with Vance, the silver bullet to solve all problems. There are ways to bring back manufacturing to the United States. There are ways to incentivize manufacturing in the United States without cutting companies' checks, without big government handouts to companies. We see that all the time here in North Carolina through the JDIG grant program. It's the Job Development Improvement Grant. That's not the way to do it. How do you bring business and how do you bring manufacturing and encourage manufacturing in the United States? This is not a gotcha question. It's very, very simple. You cut red tape. You cut government regulation. You reduce some of the barriers that companies and businesses have to go through to manufacture in the United States. You lower corporate income taxes. You continue to lower personal income taxes. And you make your state a friendly place for manufacturing. That's the process. If you want to actually bring back manufacturing, which, again, sounds good on paper, but is there really, you know, when you break this down, is there a huge need to bring back manufacturing for everything to the United States? I'm not necessarily sure that that answer is yes. Let me be clear. I don't like the fact that United States jobs are being shipped overseas. I don't think generally that is a good thing, not only for the U.S. economy, but for America as a whole. There are major security concerns, major national security concerns when the United States is no longer capable of manufacturing things. I don't know many folks that would argue that point. I think that's a pretty well-held belief across the board. So does there need to be manufacturing in the U.S.? Absolutely. Should we encourage manufacturing in the United States? Yes, absolutely. But I don't think we've necessarily done the heavy lifting that needs to be done to really incentivize that. Now, I will give incredible credit to Lee Zeldin at EPA, who I will argue has done an absolutely masterful job at getting into EPA, which is probably one of the more burdensome federal entities that exists, with just ridiculous amounts of red tape, ridiculous amounts of bureaucracy that exist within EPA. And he is doing a masterful job at cutting that BS out of the federal government. That is how you bring manufacturing back to the United States. When you make it so that companies don't have to wait years to get approval from state and federal governments to build a facility, to build a plant, to build a machinery to manufacture goods. That's, to me, the key to success. We want manufacturing, at least some level of it, here in the United States. No question about it. Now, can tariffs play a role in bringing back manufacturing? Absolutely. Is it an important part of it? Sure. The question is, how do you go about it? Our biggest issue in terms, I would think, our biggest issue in terms of trade is China. And why is there such a big issue with China and trade? Not that it's lopsided. None of that to me is even the big discussion. It is the rampant amount of intellectual property theft that exists in the Chinese government, that exists in China, where U.S. companies invest, some cases, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars worth of R&D, research and development, designing and testing and building a product, all for it to be ripped off by China within the matter of days, if not weeks, from a new product being brought to market, manufactured without proper approval, without proper intellectual property rights in China, and then being imported into the United States. That is the big issue. And the fact of the matter is, tariffs don't solve that problem. Tariffs do not stop counterfeit Chinese goods from flooding the U.S. market. They just don't. Yeah, the things are going to cost a little bit more, sure, but it doesn't stop the problem. Intellectual, I'll describe it as rampant intellectual property theft that exists in countries like China is the big problem. It undercuts U.S. manufacturing. It, in some cases, I would argue it disincentivizes folks to even bother manufacturing things in the United States or coming up with some new product because they know for what costs them, let's say $10 to manufacture can be done in China for less than a dollar, less than $2. There's very little incentive to do so. You've got marketplaces like Amazon, which is probably one of the biggest, that is responsible for the importing of these goods into the United States. These cheap Chinese knockoff intellectual property theft goods flooding the U.S. market with it. Tariffs don't solve that problem. And then there's the other element of it. We are addicted. We have an infatuation with cheap crap from China. We love cheap garbage. You walk into any big box store across the United States, and you can see all of the cheap Chinese or Vietnamese made goods that are littering the shelves that Americans are stuffing their shopping carts with. We love it. And so unless the American consumer, this is another element of it as well, unless the American consumer is willing to divorce itself from cheap goods from foreign countries, none of this is ever going to get solved. Right. And this is why I think the discussion over tariffs is important, because there's so many facets to it. The end goal, at least from what we've been told from the Trump administration, is to bring back manufacturing to the United States, which I will applaud as a goal. Tariffs are not the silver bullet. Can they be a piece of the equation? Sure. Could they be a pretty substantial piece of the equation? I could even contend that point. Sure. But there's so many other pieces of this puzzle that are just ignored. There's so many other elements that exist that cause manufacturing to leave the United States, cause U.S. consumers to just be in love with cheap crap from China. That if you can't ignore all of that and just continue down the road of tariffs. And I would argue that if the Trump administration was more strategic with their tariff effort, you probably would not have this situation going on. If the United States more specifically honed in, and a lot of the emphasis is specifically on China, and just target, hyper-focus on China, you probably could see better ROI. But this blanket 10 or 15% across the board on literally every country across the globe, I don't know what it solves. You're throwing 10% tariffs on small countries in the EU that barely import or manufacture anything into the United States. And the small, very specific amount of products that they do now skyrocket in price. That doesn't bring manufacturing back to the United States. That doesn't return jobs to the Rust Belt. It just doesn't. You want to look at countries like China. You want to look at countries like Mexico and you know, places like Vietnam, where a lot of this manufacturing is taking place. Sure. Let's get hyper-focused on those places and set out some key metrics, some key benchmarks. Well, we want to bring manufacturing back to the United States. Okay, great. How much and what's the timeline for it? Folks, I'm an equal opportunity offender on this stuff. If you want to claim you want to solve a problem, which in this case, the problem is a lack of U.S. manufacturing, I applaud the goal. I'm actually all on board with it. So the question is, how many manufacturing jobs do you want to bring back to the United States and when? You can't solve a problem. You can't work through something that in this case is a very complex geopolitical and economic issue without setting some of those key metrics, some of those key benchmarks, and some of those key goals. You just can't do it. And I'm not somebody that's going to buy into this concept of, well, just more manufacturing jobs. What does that mean? How many more? And in what places across the country? Right? To me, that's the important part of the discussion. That's the important part of the equation. Let's talk about unions. You want to really look at why places like Detroit have been hollowed out? A city of once, like what, 6 or 7 million people, now having less than a million? Why is Detroit, which was once a diamond across the United States, was one of the most impactful, important cities in the world back through the early 1900s and through the 1950s and 60s? What happened to Detroit? Unions is what happened to Detroit. At all of these auto manufacturers and all of these other manufacturing facilities in Detroit, you had unions that were constantly shaking down corporations and making it unaffordable to produce goods and products. That's the reality and one of the factors that caused companies to look at other places for manufacturing. Union states that require unionship and give these very impactful, very important entities, which are the unions, an incredible amount of authority, shaking down businesses, which is exactly what they did. Now, you look at a state like North Carolina, where you're not compelled to be part of a union, like, for example, teachers. There is a teachers union in North Carolina, but if you're a teacher, you're not required to be part of the union. And what have we seen in North Carolina over the last couple of years? We're the number one state for business. Why are we the number one state for business? There's plenty of factors. One of the big ones is work by Republicans in the North Carolina General Assembly to continue to reduce the corporate income tax rate, to continue to lower the personal income tax rate, and get rid of and cut out bureaucratic government red tape that incentivizes businesses to move their production or start brand new production facilities right here in North Carolina. I mean, the model is very clear. I mean, it's all out there for us to see. It's not a secret. You can look at a state like North Carolina, like South Carolina, like Florida, like Texas, places that have, over the last, let's call it 10 or 15 years, have done a very good job at incentivizing businesses, and not by waving blank checks at them, but by making it a friendly place to live, a friendly place to work, and a friendly place to start a business and to expand and grow a business. That's the model. We can bring back manufacturing to the United States, but I don't know that putting tariffs on Sweden is going to do that. I don't think putting a 15% tariff on the Swedes brings back manufacturing to the United States. I just don't see it. I can't draw the parallel between those two things. Just I'm struggling to do that, and I would claim that the Trump administration has not done a great job at explaining what exactly the correlation there is. Vietnam, China, Mexico, other, sure, I can understand that. But why 10% across the board? What does that do for the United States? Now, some might argue that the United States has taken in, and at numbers and data would back this up, that the United States has taken an incredible amount of revenue with tariffs. And that's an accurate statement. Here's a headline from Fox News yesterday. U.S. tariffs take surge to $31 billion in August, setting new monthly high for 2025. The article reads as follows. The U.S. collected more than $30 billion in tariff revenues in August, already the highest monthly total so far in 2025, with more data still to be reported. Total tariff revenues for 2025 has reached more than $183 billion, according to the latest customs and certain excise tax data released Thursday by the Treasury Department's department. Tariff revenues for Friday through Sunday have not yet been reported. Tariff revenues rose steadily from $17.4 billion in April to $23.9 in May before climbing to $28 in June and reaching $29 billion in July. At the current pace, the U.S. could collect as much tariff revenue in just 4 to 5 months as it did during the entire previous year. Compare this time in 2025, tariff revenues were at $86.5 billion in 2024. And this chart doesn't lie. The United States has taken an incredible amount of money in tariffs. I'm not going to argue that fact at all. There is absolutely an increase in what the U.S. is taking in with these across-the-board tariffs. And so the question is, I hear this total, great. Tariff revenues, $183 billion. Okay, but prices have also gone up on the middle class. So what are we really doing with that then, right? And yes, there's a comment being put in our Rumble live chat this morning. The tariff revenue is not earmarked. The profits go into the general fund. You know, there could be more to the story. Absolutely. And one of the things that the president has talked about, using tariffs to pay down the national debt. And, you know, is that something that could work? Is that something that is possible? Absolutely. But I mean, you know, looking at the U.S. debt clock this morning, national debt sure as hell doesn't be looking to be going down. It's continuing to go up, $37 trillion and counting. And so again, the runway on this stuff, folks, is so incredibly short. The Trump administration has a very short runway to not only get this stuff done, but to make the case to the American people that this stuff is working. To make the claim to voters that are going to be heading to ballot boxes in a little over a year that tariffs are a good policy and are having a profound impact. And as I sit here this morning, yes, I see the revenue totals. But I can't argue that it's having a profound impact on the U.S. economy. I mean, if the profound is causing goods and services to increase for American consumers, then yes, it has had a profound impact. But that's not a winning message for Trump and the Republicans. Another great comment coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. Sad how Americans don't care about quality anymore. We've become a throwaway society. Exactly. We are absolutely in love. We are addicted to cheap crap. We love it. And I'm just as guilty of it as all of you are. I'm not going to go through my Amazon cart, but everybody's buying stuff constantly. And it's all cheap goods from China. And so if folks really want to see the change here, it starts at the level of the U.S. consumer. And so again, there's so many different pieces to this puzzle. There's so many different things that add up to the larger goal of bringing back manufacturing to the United States. The Trump administration, I think, can and should continue with tariffs. I think you do it in a strategic way. I think you go after countries like China. You go after countries like Vietnam, which have become essentially a pass-through for China, where the goods are manufactured in the United States. They're shipped to places like Vietnam, and then Vietnam imports them into the United States. You go after those countries, you force them to the negotiating table. I think you could have a profound impact on some of these trade deficits, which is a big discussion out of the administration, and begin hacking away at some of these issues. That, to me, is the path forward. In all likelihood, again, I could be dead wrong on this. In all likelihood, I think the United States Supreme Court rules against the president. There is not an appetite, from my vantage point, in Congress to take on an all-across-the-board terrorist strategy with countries all over the globe. So I think Congress is out. Again, I could be wrong on that too, but with the midterm elections coming up, I think it's political suicide for Republicans to run a bill or run legislation like that in Congress. I just don't see it happening. So there's so many different things that are going to go on here. This again, this October the 14th deadline remains in place. We've heard from Attorney General Pam Bondi has announced that the Justice Department will appeal the decision to the United States Supreme Court. Tariffs can remain in place through October the 14th. The question is, does the court take it up? And how quickly do they rule on it? I would imagine that there's going to be some push probably from both sides on this to deal with this in an expeditious manner in the court system, because if not, this is setting up to be a real big disaster, I think, for Trump. The Supreme Court has to rule on it. And then if the administration wants to continue with the tariff strategy, which all information, all data points to the fact that they do, they've got to pivot and figure out how to handle it, right? How to really notch in on strategic countries, strategic trading partners, and figure out a plan forward. Trump wants to bring countries to the negotiating table. I applaud the goal. He doesn't want the United States to be taken advantage of. I couldn't agree anymore. The question is this the way to do it? American consumers are seeing the increase in prices. American consumers understand that that's what tariffs are going to do, and they're willing to give the Trump administration time. And so the question is, how much time and how quickly can some of the ROI be met on this, like, for example, this issue like tariffs? So it's a hot button debate. There's a lot of back and forth, again, even on the more predominantly on the Republican side of the aisle. Democrats are, of course, against anything that Trump and the Republicans do. So I'm not really interested in what they have to say on it. I mean, I'm not really interested in what, you know, a Morning Joe or CNN has to say on tariffs. They hate anything that Trump does. They hate the vast majority of things that you and I stand for. So their opinion is not relevant to me. What I am interested in, the academic and the discussion and the battle, which is what I'll call it, playing out on the right. And you've got folks that are very influential and have very good thoughts on both sides of the issue. And that's what makes this kind of an interesting debate. And it's why for the longest time, I've mentioned this, we talked about it a couple months ago, I kind of straddle the fence on the issue. I see and understand both sides of it. However, I would say that some of the onus now is on the Trump administration to lay out what are the actual impacts, when is some of this stuff going to take place, and how do we get there? That's an important metric and things that I like to know if we're talking about making significant changes to the United States and some of our trade relationships. To me, that is a very important part of the discussion. So we'll continue to watch as we get closer to this date of October the 14th. We'll take a look at all of those details and continue to track it right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, there was a major announcement yesterday. Nearly 34,000 pages of Department of Justice documents released on Jeffrey Epstein. I'm going to continue to comb through those throughout the day today, released a little bit late last night to really come on the air this morning and talk about it with any sort of confidence. I'm not a fan of just popping on the air and running my mouth without any backstory or evidence. I don't think that makes for a good show, and I don't want to do that to you, the great audience. So I'm going to spend some more time today digging into these files, looking into what's in here, and we'll run through all of those details tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show. I do want to thank our great sponsors, including the Law Group here in Wilmington. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. And also thanks to those that support the show financially over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. You get access to daily show notes, our monthly Zoom chat and hangout where we get to sit around for an hour or two, talk about the various news and political stories of the day. That is available to our Patreon supporters as little as $5 or $10 a month. If you are getting some value and believe that you are getting some value from the show, patreon.com Patreon.com/NickCraig. Well, that's going to do it for a Wednesday edition. Don't forget, you can join us live weekday morning, 7 a.m., YouTube, Rumble, X, and Facebook, and of course, 24/7 on demand with the Nick Craig Show podcast. That's going to do it for another edition. We're back here tomorrow morning on the Nick Craig Show.